Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Business Development. The Law Hour is an educational service in public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on privacy when we come back. You know, under the terms of a contract called the Old Covenant, it was negotiated by Moses, remember, out at Mount Sinai. You and I are entitled to 33 articulable benefits, such as rain in due season, multiplied gold, silver, herds, flocks, and great wealth. Well, George Bush told us in the last election that what Americans wanted was jobs, jobs, jobs. But you know, that's not what George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, Moses, or God himself had in mind when they wrote our Constitution, the Bill of Rights, or the Ten Commandments. All of these authorities recognized that real wealth is measured in land, cattle, property, gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. Real wealth isn't measured in employment. It's not measured in jobs, jobs, jobs. And that's because there's no money in employment. The money is in private business. The money is in sales. It's not in public business. It's not in jobs, jobs, jobs. And that's why I contend that it's time that you cashed in on your inheritance and learned how to collect those benefits of the old covenant contract and to collect those benefits in gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. Collect those benefits in real property instead of credit, debt, usury, inflation, and worthless fiat paper. Now, if you'd like to learn more about how to do just that, why don't you call for more information on my CD Home School, that's our business school for adults, and then order the free General Law CD package. Remember, it's free. The General Law CD package, that's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, it's free. Why don't you call right now? The number to call, 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request for that free General Law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, we've been talking about this thing of privacy. Privacy. Privacy is something that you have, you're born with, and you have to throw away. That's right. The government isn't following you around. The insurance industry and these various and sundry corporations and cartels aren't following you around, you know, like some spy, some sleuth in a trench coat and his hat pulled down low over his face, you know, sneaking around with a clipboard, jotting down all this information about you. No, no. And what they do is they come out here and they offer you some benefit. Or you walk into their office and you want to buy something and they push something in front of you and they want information. Let me give you another illustration. I was doing this the last program and I said, you know, you got to throw your privacy away. It isn't something that somebody takes away by force and violence. It isn't even something that these people come along and take away from you, like the garbage man, you know, comes by every Tuesday and hauls your garbage and your trash away. It's something that you have to proactively get up in the morning, get out of bed, and throw away to get rid of it. So in order for you to get rid of your privacy, it isn't that somebody's taking it away from you. It's that you don't know what it is, don't care about it, and you give it away or you throw it away because somebody comes and offers you something. They put a carrot out in front of you, and like a dumb donkey, you keep walking forward, pulling the cart because you want this carrot. And you can never quite reach the carrot, but it's always hanging out there. It's kind of like the lottery. You can't win the lottery, but you can keep buying lottery tickets and hoping, can't you? After all, somebody wins. So we're taking a look here at some of these concepts and principles here about privacy and privacy issues. And in every single case, you walk in and you fill out a form and you give up this information because there's something that you wanted to receive. And in the case of Roy versus Bowen or Bowen versus Roy, this Indian guy, he says, I want the benefits from my daughter from Social Security, but I don't want to impair the spirit in her. I don't want a Social Security number. And the Supreme Court came back and accommodated him very nicely and said, well, fine, no problem. Nobody's going to come along and take your daughter's spirit away from her. Nobody's going to come along and give her a number. You don't have to take Social Security benefits. We're not going to force these on you. But, you know, this guy Roy, I guess he wanted the benefits. And so, well, was he willing to give up his daughter's spirit? Was he willing to give up whatever it was that he wanted to keep? Would he give up his privacy for the Social Security benefits? No, most Americans will. Most Americans would give up anything that they've got. Privacy doesn't have any place in here for the benefits that we're going to get. Now, if you can say no, you know, if you could say, well, no, I'm not going to take these benefits. I'm not going to give up my privacy for these benefits. I told you in the last program, my son Ted in the ninth grade gave up student body card. He couldn't get a student body card without registration in public school. And he couldn't get driver's education. Probably they couldn't get insurance on him without this registration. And so he graduated from high school. There wasn't any problem there. There were some benefits that come from this registration that he didn't surrender. And you can sit there and say, well, they had all this information from years past. What the school registration is, it's a contract between the parents and the school to take liability away from the school. The school doesn't care about the registration per se. They care about the liability. And so they come along and they say, well, all of you parents have to sign this registration. And when you sign the registration, you become liable. And after all, you've got compulsory public education. So what happens is your kid falls down on the school grounds and they've got insurance, you know, to cover things like that. But, and that's all paid for by you taxpayers out there. It's a part of free public education. I mean, you people believe that public education is free. Public education is the most expensive methodology for educating children ever devised by the mind of man. And Americans love it. I mean, you talk about a scam. I mean, it's more profitable than the mafia and loan sharking. It's called public education. It delivers the least amount of education for the most amount of money ever devised in the history of education. It's never been anything like it. And it's been sold so effectively, people believe it. And I don't want to take it away from people. I mean, you know, people have a right to make choices. And if you want to choose public education, that's fine by me. I don't have any qualms about that. I don't want to buy it. I don't want to pay $7,000 to educate a child to the 28th percentile. I mean, I don't have to turn my kid out to be an imbecile and spend a lot of money doing it. Hell, I could turn out an imbecile for practically no money at all. Americans turn out imbeciles and spend $7,000 on average per head. I would contend that, hell, we could turn out dumb kids for little or nothing. It doesn't take a lot of money to turn out a stupid kid, does it? Well, I've been covering an article here written back in the 1980s as it relates to people's concerns back in the 1980s about this thing of government and industry coming in and taking your privacy by way of a computer. I've been showing you step by step that, no, it isn't the computer that's taking your privacy away from you. The computer is simply the instrument by which we keep track of the information that you already gave away when you filled out the piece of paper. Sure, you fill out a piece of paper. Think about it. Every time you walk into the bank and they say, sign here, that's a piece of paper that you're creating. You go into Social Security, they say, fill this out. You go into the doctor or the dentist's office, here, fill this out and sign it. You fill out all these pieces of paper and you sign these pieces of paper. Every time you sign your name, you impair your liberty to some degree and give up information that you would not give to a Denny's waitress. If you wouldn't give it to a Denny's waitress, why are you giving it to this person or that person? I told you in the last program, you know, if I came to you and said, tell me about your wife's orgasms, you'd look at me like I'm stupid. There was a guy by the name of Kinsey walking around America 40, 50 years ago asking those same questions, and people lined up to tell him. Well, you people would sit there and answer. You people will sit there and give out information to anybody that asks. Now, of course, you know, people that are collecting the information are a little smarter than the average Joe Sixpack out there that's answering the questions. You know, I would concede that if some guy came up and knocked on your door and said, I'm the local pedophile, registered with the police, I live next door, give me your telephone number so I can call your kid, you probably would say no. But you go down here and give that same information out to total strangers in the bank, in the hospital, in the doctor's office, the dentist's office, the public school. You give that same information away to the same pedophile. He just poses as being something else. Up in Boston, the Catholic Church admits, this isn't what was put out in the press, this isn't something that somebody's speculating on. The Catholic Church admitted that 35% of the clergy, 35%, you people up in Boston, Massachusetts, that's one priest out of every three is a pedophile or a sodomite. And you send your kids to Sunday school for crying out loud. Well, listen, you Catholics up there, if you're going to send your kid to church, there isn't any reason why you wouldn't want to tell a local pedophile next door, you know, what your telephone number is. What difference does it make to you who's molesting your children? The Catholic priest or the local pedophile registered with the police? Hell, the priest probably isn't registered with the police. Do you want your child molested by somebody who isn't registered with the police? A total stranger, for crying out loud? No, no, 1,000 times no. I don't know. Drives me kind of crazy. I'm just a reporter. I'm just here asking some questions and saying, hey, have you people thought about this? Especially you people that have unlisted telephone numbers. You go into the doctor's office, do you give him your telephone number? Probably. So it's important to note that most of the information that's maintained, including sensitive health and financial records, is gathered without any guarantee of confidentiality. Now, you go into the bank and they say, well, give us a financial statement. And so you fill out this financial statement and you tell this banker now everything about your personal financial history. You know, you tell him how many cars you got and how much money you owe on them and how much you're making in the form of payments, how much money you earn on the job, how much child support you're paying out, and, you know, all this personal information. Information that if I came up to you and said, hey, Charlie, give me this information, how much are your child support payments? You know, you'd say, Gordon, I'm not going to tell you. But you see, if you told me, I'd say, oh, you're paying $300 a month in child support payments. Okay, hell, I'd forget it in the next 15 minutes. But you put this down on a piece of paper and give it to a banker who puts it in a file cabinet, which is accessible by every employee in the bank. So immediately, from the time you fill out the financial statement and give it to your banker over there, it is now available to every employee in that bank. He can walk over to the same file cabinet and open it up. That's true, he probably doesn't, but that same information is then put on computer, and then it's made available to every branch in that bank. So if you walked into a branch in Redding, California of Bank of America, and you gave them that information, and they put it away in a file cabinet or in a computer in Redding, California, it's now available to every branch of Bank of America nationwide. Then it's probably available to the Federal Reserve Bank in Washington, D.C., and all of its 12 member banks in Seattle, Washington, San Francisco, California, Kansas City, Missouri, you know. Did you think about that? Did you want that personal, sensitive, financial information made available to the Federal Reserve Bank and all of their employees in Seattle, Washington? I guess you're sitting there saying, well, maybe does it make any difference? Like, if you don't care about your privacy, no, it doesn't make any difference at all. But the Federal Reserve Bank in Seattle does not know how much my child support payments are. They don't know whether I've got any children, whether I'm married, and whether or not I'm making child support payments, because I didn't tell them, and I'm not going to. There's two sides to the coin, you know. They ask you the question, you know, well, what's your mother's maiden name? And when they get your mother's maiden name, they have a piece of information. And if you withhold your mother's maiden name, which, by the way, what relevance does your mother's maiden name have to do with making a loan at the bank? You ever think about that? But you're afraid that if you don't tell the bank your mother's maiden name, that they won't give you the loan, and that's the benefit that you want. Why do you want to borrow money? Why do you even want to borrow money? If you had a profitable business, you wouldn't be borrowing, you'd be lending. In fact, one of the benefits, one of the 33 articulable benefits that you receive under the old covenant with God is that you will lend but not borrow. So if you're a borrower, obviously you don't practice the law of God, you don't practice private property. So I guess, you know, debtors aren't entitled to privacy. Debtors are slaves. There's an old adage that goes that gold is the currency of kings, silver the currency of gentlemen, barter the currency of peasants. And debt is the currency of slaves. I mean, slaves don't have private property. Slaves don't have privacy. Most Americans are slaves. They deal in credit. Most Americans aren't lenders. They're borrowers. Borrowers are not entitled to privacy. So if you're a borrower, you know, you don't need privacy. You're not entitled to it. But, you know, you may be a borrower. You may be a slave. You may be a peasant. And you may aspire to, someday I'd like to become a gentleman. Maybe if you're a gentleman, you may aspire to, someday I'd like to be a king. You know, you can change your status here. Under our system in Anglo-Saxon administration, we've always prided ourselves with being able to climb the ladder of success. And you can certainly do that. If at some point in time you're a lowly soldier in the army with no privacy and you're a total credit debt slave and you're a bondservant to your government, if you desire freedom and if you desire privacy and if you desire the status of a king or a gentleman, you could achieve that if you put your mind to it. You may have been taught and trained to be a credit debt serf from the time you were first institutionalized in the first grade. But, you know, you could be a lowly slave, serf, peasant, and you could become the president of a giant American corporation, you know, if you put your mind to it. That's what they used to tell us, you know, when I was a kid growing up. You could become the president of a giant American corporation. Boys and girls, all presidents of giant American corporations are credit debt serfs, slaves to their masters in government, trade, commerce, business, or industry. There are no common law freemen sitting as chairman of the board of directors of a great American corporation. So if freedom is what you desire, private business is the vehicle to get you there, not becoming the president of a giant American corporation. So it's important to note that most of the information that is maintained about you, including your sensitive health and financial records, is gathered without any guarantee of confidentiality. Insurance companies, for example, typically require individuals to waive confidentiality as a condition of coverage. Now, for you to get insurance, you have to become a credit debt slave and waive your rights to privacy so that you can break the law of God and practice limited liability instead of strict liability. Once you grow up and get to be big boys and girls and can actually be responsible for your own actions and practice strict liability, you can have privacy. As long as you have limited liability and you cannot accept responsibility for your own actions and you practice limited liability, you cannot have privacy. That makes all the sense in the world. Big boys and girls that grow up and become responsible can have privacy. Irresponsible people cannot. People with insurance are not responsible. The insurance company is. Now, once information is on file, experience has shown that the temptation to use that information often proves to be irresistible. And pledges of confidentiality that you receive from your banker or your insurance agent have been known to fall by the wayside at the mere mention of national security or the display of a policeman's badge. Even United States census files, historically the most sacroscant, sacroscant. My God, what kind of a word is that? Sounds Hungarian to me. Sacroscant. Of all government records, were opened on at least two occasions to track down draft resistors during the First World War and to locate Japanese Americans for roundup into detention camps at the onset of World War II. Oh, my God, you mean to tell me that your government would take private census information, pledged to be confidential, and then use it to round up draft dodgers and Japanese Americans? Yeah, they'd do that. You know, there's no honor in government. Government bureaucrats are liars. They're liars. Paid professional liars. Hell, there isn't anything new about that. It's always been that way. So are bankers and insurance agents and everybody else out there that promises you that this information will never go any further than this. Hell, come on. Don't you people grow up and act like adults for a change. Left to themselves to balance privacy interests against other concerns, business and government will nearly always let privacy take the fall. The phenomenon recalls Edmund Burke's warning over 200 years ago that the true danger is when liberty is nibbled away for expedience and by parts. Hey, I don't know who this guy Edmund Burke is, but he hit the nail right on the head. They just kind of nibble away at it, you know, like the camel sticking his nose in the tent, you know, little by little. Now, if you allow it, your privacy will be taken away, but you have to give it up. So when the census taker came here in 2000, I exercised Title 13, Section 224D, and I said, I'm a religious objector. I practice the law of Moses. I'm a Hebrew. Did you know it's against the law to participate in the census? Yeah, God prohibits it. I just want to let you know that. It's a violation of the law of God. You have to commit a sin to do that. So the people who later, after they had sinned by breaking the law of God and gave the census information, found out that the government then used their criminal behavior in their violation of the law of God and then came back and put them in prison for, get this, draft dodging. And then rounded up the Japanese Americans. Hey, you Japanese Americans that participated in the census brought it on yourselves. You violated the law of God, and there was a penalty to pay. And incarceration in concentration camps was the penalty. I've said it before, I'll say it again. There's no such thing as a broken law without a penalty. And every time you break the law of God, you will suffer a penalty. Many of you suffer penalties like public education, and you think that it's a blessing. Paying $7,000 to educate your kid to be an imbecile is not a blessing, boys and girls. And in the inner-city public schools, where the educational standards are the lowest, it costs more than $7,000. It's $14,000 to $21,000. They got a school system up in New York State. They're spending $21,000 a kid to turn out fools. Hell, I would contend that, send your kid down here to our school. I'll turn out a fool, and I'll charge anywhere near $21,000. Hell, I can do it for $4,500. You could send your kid to a private school for $2,500 a year. Of course, they don't turn out fools there, but, you know, it didn't cost very much. You save yourself a lot of money. For individuals with a juvenile arrest record or a history of psychiatric treatment, the existence of these files is a ticking time bomb. Release of this information in these files can result in public embarrassment, and in many cases it can lead to loss of a job. You know, the time when a person could move away from his or her past has vanished long ago. Even for those with nothing to hide, the specter of computer data banks tracking one's every move has enormous impact. As the former U.S. Senator Sam Ervin Jr. observed at a 1971 Senate hearing on federal data banks, computers, and the Bill of Rights, he said, once people start fearing the government, and once they think they're under surveillance by government, whether they are or not, they're likely to refrain from exercising the great rights that are incorporated in the First Amendment to make their minds and their spirits free. In other words, the knowledge that we're being watched, that everything we do might be recorded, makes us alter the way we live, and sometimes in ways we may not even perceive. After a while, conformity can become second nature. Ironically, the maintenance of computer files, which law enforcers find so useful in the detection of crime, forces everyone to look over one shoulder, just like a hunted criminal. Well, here in Ozark County, we have that process. It goes on right here. Let me describe it for you. And you probably have it in your neck of the woods, too. Our local sheriff investigates everybody that moves into the county. And you say, well, how does he even know that somebody moves into the county? Well, here's the way this works. Let's say you live in California and you want to move to Ozark County. So you move into the county under cover of darkness with your U-Haul truck. And maybe you've been here weeks before and you bought a house or you rented a place or something like that. And then you go down to the telephone company and you tell them you want a telephone. And so they say, here, fill out this information. And you give them your name and address and your telephone number in California and your credit history and all the information that they ask for at the telephone company. And you do the same thing at the electric company and the gas company and the garbage company and all this. Well, our sheriff, he's not real smart. I don't think he's got a PhD. I can't tell you that he doesn't, but I kind of doubt it. Generally, people that work for $28,000 a year don't have PhDs. Probably some exceptions to that, but generally. So anyway, our sheriff, he goes down to the telephone company and he goes to the gas company and the garbage company and he says, hey, you got any new applications? And that sweet young girl, you know, behind the counter says, oh, yes, Sheriff Pace, we have these applications. And so she hands him a pile of applications and he says, thank you very much. And he goes back to his office and he pulls out number one on the top over here and it says Joe Finkelstein, who's moving from 2204 Jones Road in Tracy, California, bought a house here in Gainesville, Missouri, or out here in Farm Road 608 or something like that, and his social security number is, and his name is, and his birth date is, and he's got your name, your birth date, he's got your social security number, and he's got your past address, and he's got your driver's license, and all this information. Now, our Sheriff Pace more than likely has the $1,600 computer program, and he plugs this information into his computer, hands it off like it's not, you know, to some girl in the office, and says, hey, give me a report, and it comes back, and they get a complete report on you, and they find out that, yeah, you were arrested, and you served in the Army, and that you were a juvenile delinquent, and that you've got a mental history, and they've got you're a diabetic, and the sheriff knows more about you than you know about yourself by the end of the day. How about that, huh? Now, I've got electric lights here in my office. I came into my office this morning, and I sat down here at my machine, and I'm recording a broadcast, and I'm using electricity, but I don't have electricity in my name. And when I'm cold, I have heat, but we don't have gas in my name. And when I want to talk to somebody, I pick up the telephone and I dial, but I don't have any telephone in my name. There aren't any credit reports floating around on my sheriff's desk. Now, I'm sure that my Sheriff Pace over there knows where I live, and I'm sure that he knows me, and he's probably a pretty nice guy, and he's probably doing his job, and we don't blame him for doing that. But, you know, I didn't think I wanted my Sheriff Pace over here to know what my telephone number is. Now, Sheriff Pace can get online and he can call area code 417-273-4967 just like you can, but he won't talk to me any more than you will. And I'm sure he can call the White House, but he ain't going to get hold of George Bush any more than you or I are going to get hold of George Bush. So, you know, these are choices that people make in life. There's a public side and there's a private side. Now, my sheriff, he has a public side. If I want to talk to the sheriff, you know, I go to the blue pages in my telephone book, and here's the sheriff's office, and I call the sheriff's office. And if he wants to talk to me, he can. But just because I call the sheriff's office doesn't mean I'm going to talk to the sheriff. And, you know, just because somebody calls you doesn't mean that you necessarily want to talk to them. And, you know, there's a life out there that's public and private. And if you'd like to have a private life, hey, you're listening to the right program, because we can show you how to have a private life. Public officials have private lives. You know, governors have private lives. They have public lives and they have private lives. And I'll bet you don't know too much about your governor's private life. And I'll bet you that he's not sharing much of that with you. People who are kings and use real money, you know, kings have a currency called gold. And then gentlemen have a currency called silver. Peasants have a currency called barter. And slaves have a currency called debt. Credit, debt, serfs, peasants, and slaves don't have privacy. Gentlemen and kings do. And if you aspire to be a king or a gentleman, you too can have a private life. Hang on here. Let me give you a reminder that you're listening. You are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. And for more information, you can call the law school here And the number is 417-273-4967, or you can go to our webpage, georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, economics, history, health, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about privacy. How do you get it? Where does it come from? Most people don't have it. Most people don't care about it. Most people aren't concerned about privacy and privacy issues. But if you wanted to conduct a private business, and you wanted to keep your business activities free from government surveillance, you can't do that in public business with a business license with a store down on Main Street. I remember one time a coin dealer came to school here, and he was complaining bitterly about the state of Cleveland, Ohio, the state of Ohio interfering in his private business. And when he said private business, I perked up my ears. I don't run across very many private businessmen. I'm one, but I don't run across very many of those critters. And when he said private business, I couldn't contain myself. I said, I didn't know you had a private business. Yes, he said, I have a private business. And I said, well, where is it located? And he said, well, my store is on, I don't know what street it was, 43rd Avenue or whatever it is. And I said, do you have a coin store in Cleveland? And he said, yes. A private coin store in Cleveland. I said, do you have a business license? And he said, well, yes, I have a business license. I said, do you have a telephone in your store? And he said, well, yes. I said, well, let me ask you this. Do you have a federal tax ID number? And he said, yeah. I said, is this store incorporated or do you have a DBA? And he said, well, yes, it's incorporated. And yes, we use a DBA. I said, well, do you have a sales tax permit? And he said, yes, so I have a sales tax permit. And I said, and this is your private business? And he said, well, yes, this is my private business. And I'm really upset about all of these government agents and agencies, you know, that keep coming into my store and making all these demands upon me and my private business. You listening to this? There isn't anything private about this. This guy went down to the state and said, hey, I need a business license so I can do business with the public. I need a sales tax permit, so I can participate in the sales tax program. I need a federal tax ID number so I can participate in the income tax program so that I can collect taxes and employ people. There's nothing private about this. This is public business, boys and girls. You people aren't involved in private business. Let me describe this a little bit. One time I got a letter in the mail, and it was, this if I can remember this bureaucracy here now, it was from the Bureau, there was a Bureau involved here, the Bureau of Vocational Education of Missouri. The Bureau of Vocational Education. Now, the Gordon Law School is a private, non-sectarian law school. Let me read you this line again. I've got a line here. I read it to you every day. If you people pay attention, you'd know this. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement only. This school is not open to the public. Anyway, I don't have a business license, and I didn't have a vocational education license. And I got this letter from what was that agency again? The Bureau of Vocational Education sent me a nice letter and said, listen, we don't have you on file here in our office. And we just heard the other day that you're running a law school down here in Isabella, Missouri, so fill out this form. And this form, they want to know your name, address, and phone number, and federal tax ID number, social security number, are you married, how many kids do you have, and where do you bank, and how much money you've gotten, all this information. So I sat down and I wrote them a 9-page letter. And I said, let me describe what we're doing here and who we are and what we are. And I said, this is a private school. I don't even know how in the hell you heard about us. Well, come to find out, there was a Jehovah's Witness. And he showed up here one day, and he wanted to convert me to the to the Jehovah's Witness gang down the street here. And I invited him in. You know, I'm a pretty nice guy, and I'm easy to get along with. And I said to the guy, I said, well, come on in, let's talk. And so we talked, and he came back two or three times. And pretty nice guy. He was a bricklayer by trade. You know, and I'm a general contractor. I'm a plumber by trade, but I'm a general contractor. And so I'm always interested in other tradespeople and one thing and another. Well, and come to find out after, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks, he came back, you know, 3 or 4 times. And I didn't join his church, and he got kind of bummed out. And so he took my personal private information that I share with other personal private people concerning our school and what we do here. And he sent it in to the state. And he said, this guy Gordon's operating a school down here, and he's not licensed, bonded, or insured. But I wanted to point out to you boys and girls that this is a private school. It's not open to the public. So I pointed that out. And I pointed out that we're not engaged in commerce. Did you see that word commerce there? Yeah, commerce. It's a private, non-commercial. Non-commercial. This is not a commercial school. We're not open to the public. This is a private law school. You can't come here without an invitation. And I pointed that out to the Bureau, and they said, now listen, we have, for religious schools and religious institutions and religious people, we have an exemption. So fill it out and apply for an exemption. And I pointed out to this agency, I said, listen, if I could apply and get permission from you to get tax exemption, to get licensure exemption, hell, I could get a license. I'm a Hebrew. I practice Hebrew law. It's against the law for me to contract with foreign and alien gods. And the First Amendment protects that right. And I said, now, if this isn't satisfactory, you know, send me a letter and let's get with it and we'll go litigate this. Well, they never sent me back a response. So I guess that they figured that, oh, this is a private school. Now, that's what private business is all about. Private business isn't open to the public. My God, boys and girls, if it was open to the public, it wouldn't be private, would it? Now, the university down the street here in Springfield, we've got a University of Missouri here. That's a public institution. Anybody can go to college at the University of Missouri. Hell, even I could go to college at the University of Missouri. The thing that makes a school or a business private is that you can't go to school here. You can't come in here and buy here. That's what makes it private. I know right away somebody said, well, you dummy, how are you going to sell anything if you're not open to the public? You know, when people go to public school, they get a public view. They don't understand privacy and privacy issues. It's such a, you know, an off-the-wall concept. Privacy doesn't enter the public's mind because they're not private. They're public. And the only thing that's between their ears is public. They don't grasp private, privacy, private business. So it's a wild new concept. So I thought I'd share that with you a little bit. So I run this guy through my business school over here, and when he got to the end of the business school, he said, you know, now I think I'm beginning to understand. I don't have a private business. I have a public business, and that's why it's being regulated by all of these public enterprises like the State Tax Commission and the IRS and Social Security and the EPA and OSHA and all these government agencies. And I said, now you got it. The reason that you have all of these government agencies involved in your business is because you went down and signed an application for a sales tax permit, an application for a federal tax ID number. And he said, well, I thought I had to do that. Well, you do. If you want to conduct public business like everybody else, you have to have a federal tax ID number. You got to have a sales tax number. Now, you know, we don't collect sales tax here. That's because we don't deal in commercial paper. We don't take Federal Reserve notes here. You have to pay here in gold coin. Tuition here is payable in gold coin. I know it sounds kind of crazy, and somebody says, well, you can't get any students that way. Well, that's fine. If we don't have any students, that's pretty damn private, isn't it? Can't get any more private than that. But we're not open to the public. So get that out of your head. And if I was open to the public, I'd need a federal tax ID number. If I practiced the law of Missouri, then I would have to comply with all the laws of Missouri. Has it ever occurred to us that maybe we ought to apply the law of God? You know, in Acts 5, verse 29, God came up with a wild concept. I mean, it's really off the wall. Let me read it to you. If you got a Bible, go flip it open to Acts. Acts, you know, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Acts 5, verse 29. And in Acts 5, 29, then Peter and the other apostles answered and said, we ought to obey God rather than men. Have you ever thought about that? I know, Peter. Can you believe that? All Scripture is given by inspiration of God. Remember, it's profitable for doctrine, reproof, correction, and instruction. Yeah, God himself said, you know, we ought to obey God rather than men. You ought to obey God rather than the IRS. You ought to obey God rather than the EPA. You ought to obey God rather than Social Security. Did you know that? I know, it's kind of crazy. I got to concede, but You know, in most people's minds, they say, well, I can buckle my seatbelt and drive 55 and register in my car, but I just can't obey God and keep his commandments. You know, God prohibits us from participating in the census, and the government comes along and says, well, we command you that you participate in the census. God, you know, tells you that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit and that you ought not to make any cuttings and markings on it. And the state comes along and says, oh, no, God's all wrong. You should have snake venom and monkey pus shot up in your arms. We call it vaccination. I don't know. I don't tell people what to do or how to do it, but I do suggest from time to time, like I did to this coin dealer over here. I said, you know, if you'd practice private business, you'd probably get a lot more money coming in your door, and you'd probably have a lot less tax to pay, and you'd probably have a healthier, happier lifestyle. And I said, by the way, out of your business, you know, just take a look at a year's business. Now, I'm a coin collector. I got to admit, you know, I'm always bedazzled by that hole in my coin collection, and I got to go get another coin, you know, and put it in that slot in my book. I'm one of those. Anyway, this guy was conducting some, you know, kind of semi-private business with me. I buy coins privately. And he had a 1794 Floyd here half dollar. And I kind of needed that for one of my slots over here. And at the time, as I recall, it was, I don't know, you know, pretty pricey, I thought. But if I go into a coin store and I buy it, it gets even more pricey. So I thought, well, shucks, let's see if I can make a deal with this guy. Well, he happened to be over at an auction, and he picked up some coins out of this private auction. And he happened to have this 94 flowing hair, and I said, well, I'd like to negotiate a deal for that, and we did, and I bought it from him, and I traded with him. And we concluded our deal, and I said to him, how many coins do you sell privately like this? And he said, about 90%. And I said, how many coins do you sell out of your store? And he said, about 10%. And so then I kind of reversed a little bit, and I said, well, how much government interference and problem do you have in these private sales that you make to people like me? And he said, none, zero, zilch. And I said, how much problem are you having with government agencies and taxing agencies over the 10% that you sell out of your store? And he said, 100% of my problem comes from the 10% of the sales that I make out of my store. And I said, well, let me ask you this. If you take a look at the amount of hours of time that you're investing and spending making private sales to people like me here tonight, about how much of your time do you spend? He mulled it over a little bit, and he said, probably about 10% of my time goes into making these private sales, and about 90% of my time is spent in my store making 10% of my sales. So I proposed a wild new solution, and I said, let's suppose for the sake of our discussion that you were to spend half of the time that you're now spending in your store. Close your store and throw away that whole 10% of your gross sales. Just throw it away. Get rid of it. Forget about it. Close your store. Then just take one half of that time and devote that one half of that time that you're now spending in your stores. You know, maybe 20 hours a week. Drumming up private business like tonight's sale to me on this flowing here. And do you think you could make up that 10%? And God, his eyeballs just bulged. It was like the Ford light came on. No kidding. It was like night and day. And he said, oh my God, if I closed my store, I could eliminate sales tax, income tax, OSHA, the EPA, the licensing board, and all my problems. I could just close the doors and forget about those and concentrate on just knocking on George Gordon's door and other guys like me and come into their house and sit down and open up my bag and show them what I got and make a sale and walk out the door. And I said, yeah, and I'll pay you in gold coin. Hell, I won't even write you a check. I'll just pay you with gold. He thought that was a heck of an idea. He went back home. He sold his store. He closed it out. And the last I heard of him, he lived his life happily ever after. It's kind of like Cinderella. Just lived her life happily ever after in private business. Now, what does this guy call himself today? I don't know. Joe Finkelstein coin dealer, I guess. I don't know. You lose a lot of pizzazz. I got to concede, you know, that, you know, here you are a member of the local Chamber of Commerce, and you're eating donuts and drinking coffee with the rest of the merchants and businessmen over at the coffee clatch, and you're well-regarded in the community, and you're a somebody, and then you close your store, and you go out here, and you start dealing in private business, and all of a sudden, you're a nobody. You're not a member of the Chamber of Commerce because you don't deal in commerce anymore. You obey God and keep his commandments, and you practice just weights and balances, and you stop using commercial paper, stop making contracts with foreign and alien gods. I know it's kind of crazy at first blush, but it just solves so many problems. You know, I used to run a public corporation called Atlantis Manufacturing Company, and I had 30 employees, and I had 28 agencies of government that I had to deal with, from Boise, Idaho to Washington, D.C., 28 agencies of government. Today, I don't deal with any agencies of government. None. Zero. That's why I'm so happy. I haven't seen a government agent for so long or had a letter from the government for so long that I hardly know that they exist. And the government's happy. I don't involve myself in public business. I woke up one day and I said, I don't think the government wants me to operate in business. I think the government wants to put me out of business. And so I said, well, gee, if the government wants to impose the first plank to the Communist Manifesto, if they want to abolish all right to property, why shouldn't I help? Why shouldn't I get behind the movement? I said, shucks, I closed my doors, and now I don't employ 30 people anymore. I don't employ anybody. I don't pay any employment tax. I don't produce anything anymore. I used to produce about $100,000 a month, about $1 million a year. I mean, I used to get out there and produce a lot of furniture, $1 million a year. I don't produce anything anymore. Nothing. So now I'm happy to report to you that I produce nothing, employ no one, pay no taxes, and I'm as happy as a clam at high tide. And somebody the other day said, well, how do you live? And I said, very well. Thank you. I live very well. I don't know about those 30 employees. I don't know how they're living. But I certainly don't want to get in my government's way. I don't want to impose private property and private business upon my government or upon anybody or privacy upon anybody. I want to pursue private business, and I want to pursue the law of God, and I want to pursue privacy, but I don't want to impose that upon anybody else, and I don't think God does either. I don't think God cares about your privacy at all. But if you want to be private, you can be. And if you want to be in a private business, you can be in a private business. Our Constitution provides for private business. Our Constitution does not provide for public business. To get involved in public business, Social Security, income tax, the mark of the beast, you have to get out of bed in the morning, and you've got to go out and throw away your privacy, throw away your Bill of Rights, throw away your freedom. You got to get up and go do something to get rid of your God-given rights, privileges, and immunities. If you want to do that, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. But if you want to make a meaningful change, you can do that also. And we'll take that up again next time when we come back on the Law Hour and Editorial Review tomorrow, talking about privacy. So let me remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. And if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. We're open to individuals, but by prearrangement. And the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.